honorable members, I'm going to allow our legal advisor to take us through on the matters at hand. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good day to the committee members and guests. Chairperson, the issue at hand was the letters from the Minister of Public Enterprise, Ms. Lynn Brown. On the 8th of August and the 13th of October, she wrote to this committee addressing two letters raising various procedural issues regarding the oversight inquiry. Those letters were responded to. Subsequent to this, Advocate Venara received a letter from the Office of the State Attorney in Pretoria, and the letter is before members. The title of the letter is Concerns Over Your Conduct of the Parliamentary Inquiry and Failure on Your Part to Respect Our Clients' Procedural Rights and the Constitution, hereby violating the advocacy ethics and the conduct of proceedings. Just to summarize the points raised by the State Attorney on behalf of the Minister is that they raised various issues regarding the procedure and the process of the oversight inquiry. They indicate they are unhappy with the manner and style in which evidence is being led, and they are of the view that evidence must be led in a manner that assists all parties and not just the portfolio committee. The letter to Advocate Venara says that he needed to respond or they would report him to the General Counsel of the Bar of South Africa. I've spoken to Advocate Venara and he's indicated he has responded to this letter. However, due to all these issues that have been raised by the Minister and all these procedural queries, Parliament has thought it prudent to seek the opinion of external counsel. So we brief Advocate Wim Trenrove to provide us an opinion, and we asked him to address all the concerns raised by the Minister in our initial letters and also regarding the issue of the evidence leader. And the opinion is before members. It's the opinion dated the 9th of November, and it's the opinion for the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises on the inquiry into Eskom, Transnet, and Danel. Chair, I don't wish to go to the entire opinion because it sets out in quite detail the legal issues and the law. I'm just merely going to highlight the salient points regarding the procedural challenges. So if we start on page one, counsel sets out the entire legal framework regarding the Constitution and the powers of Parliament. And on page three, he discusses the founding principle of accountability and the rights or the powers of the National Assembly to hold the executive and organs of state to account. That goes further on page four. And if we get to page 6, paragraph 10, here he discusses the powers and the tools available to portfolio committees in conducting oversight. Specifically, he refers to Rule 167D and F of the Rules of the National Assembly, and he says that those rules confer a wide mandate on committees to conduct public hearings and to determine its own working procedure in doing so. Portfolio committees thus have a wide and open-ended power to conduct public hearings in whatever way they deem appropriate, subject only to the rules. And he sets out the rules in details as to what confines the committees. He further sets out the Powers and Privileges Act and the powers of the committee to subpoena. So if we go to paragraph 17, after setting out all the rules, he says, subject to the foregoing rules, a portfolio committee is at large to determine its own procedure in the conduct of a public inquiry. Section 57(1) of the Constitution allows the National Assembly to determine and control its own internal procedures and to make rules to do so. Rule 167F is in the nature of a default rule that allows page 8 and 9, going on to page 9, Rule 167 is in the nature of a default rule that allows the committee to determine its own working arrangements where no other rule provides otherwise. So that is an important point to note, that in terms of Rule 167F, the committee is allowed to determine its own working arrangements. If we go further down to paragraph 19, and the heading there is administrative law rules, it says the committee that holds a public inquiry merely to report to the National Assembly in the performance of its oversight function does not perform administrative action subject to the rules of administrative action laid down by the Promotion of Administrative Action Justice Act. But such a committee does exercise public power. It is obliged to do so in accordance with the fundamental principles of the rule of law. The most significant of these principles is the requirement of rationality. And then in paragraph 20, he says, the portfolio committee thus has a wide discretion to determine its own procedure and ultimately to compile its own report to the National Assembly. The only legal requirement that it must do so within the bounds of rationality. This means that both its procedure and its report must be rational. Rationality is a low threshold which requires only a minimum standard of procedural fairness and substantive reason. So he goes on further in paragraph 21, and this is important to note. The requirements for procedural rationality may vary from case to case. In the ordinary conduct of a public hearing with a view to a report to the National Assembly, a portfolio committee will usually satisfy the requirements of fairness by observing the following rules. Firstly, witnesses should be allowed to have their own legal assistance if they choose. And it clarifies, says, I emphasize that they are entitled to legal assistance and not legal representation. And I think the committee had already agreed to that point that any witness can have legal assistance. In paragraph 21.2, he says, the committee should not, in its report to the National Assembly, make adverse findings against people without affording them an opportunity to address the evidence against them. And he suggests that a provisional report be prepared and those who have been implicated be allowed an opportunity to respond. So I think the members will know that that point has also been agreed to, that the report will be sent to those implicated and they will be able to comment. With regard to the issue of evidence leader, he says there is some uncertainty whether the committee is entitled to appoint an evidence leader. In his view, he believes that the committee can adopt this process. He says it is within its mandate to regulate its own procedure, and he believes that it makes good sense to appoint someone to do so. So that addresses the issue of the evidence leader. If we go further, the minister raised specific questions, and he in her letter, and he responds to each question. So just briefly, with regard to, she raised the issue of the matter of Mr. Molefe having an ongoing case, that is now pending before court, and his response is that Parliament and the judiciary are institutions of equal standing. Neither trumps the other. There is no rule that says that Parliament may not inquire and report on a matter merely because it happens to be before the courts. And he just goes on to discuss that in more detail, but the bottom line is that Parliament has its own power to conduct an inquiry, and that the matter is pending before court does not prevent us from carrying out our own mandate. The minister raised the issue of there being other investigations simultaneously with this inquiry, and as the Tremgrove says, this is not the concern of the portfolio committee. The investigation by the SRU and the National Assembly both have their own powers and duties, and neither in any way should be affected by the fact that the other is investigating the matter. Because there is an investigation, this does not relieve the duty of Parliament to hold an SOE to account and exercise its oversight mandate. The next issue that the minister raised was, will the committee conduct an investigation prior to conducting the hearing? And his view was that there was no such duty on the committee to do so. It can determine its own processes. And then the next issue was addressed regarding the evidence leader. The next question in paragraph 32, the minister asked whether the committee will seek written input from witnesses, and Triangov said the committee has a free hand to do so and it can do whatever it feels that is sensible. Question 6 on paragraph 34, the minister asked whether the committee proposes to invite input from any interested party or whether its hearing will be confined to witness that it identifies. Counsel's response was, the committee is again at large to do whatever it pleases. It would make good sense, however, to invite all interested parties to provide input if they wish to do so. They could, for instance, be invited in the first place to make input in writing. The committee could then decide whether to call them thereafter. The next issue is about legal assistance on paragraph 36, which we've already addressed. On paragraph 38, the minister raised the issue of the interim report, and counsel said that the committee need not follow the process of allowing the report to be sent to people, but it is a useful way to ensure that everyone is given a chance to defend themselves. And as we said, the committee had agreed to that. Question 9 on paragraph 40 was whether Advocate Vanara was conflicted because of his role as registrar and being a leader of evidence. And in paragraph 41, counsel says that Advocate Vanara is not conflicted at all, as he is not a decision maker in the inquiry into the conduct of SOEs. With regard to whether the inquiry is inquisitorial or accusatorial, in paragraph 43, counsel says it's clearly inquisitorial, and the evidence leader is acting on behalf of the committee, and it may tell witnesses the topics beforehand, but there's not necessarily a need to do so. With regard to the committee's terms of reference, the minister raised an issue about the finalization and having the terms of reference made public. And in paragraph 44, counsel says that there's no need to formalize a terms of reference. This is a practical issue, and it's up to the committee to determine whether it even wants the terms of reference or not. Question 12, that was answered about legal representation. Question 13, regarding other investigations, that was also answered that the committee can proceed despite there being other investigations. Paragraph 50, regarding Mr. Molefe's case, that was also discussed. In paragraph 52, the powers of the committee to subpoena, a counsel points out that in section 14 to 17 of the Powers and Privileges Act, Parliament and its committees have the power to subpoena witnesses. Regarding the use of the emails that are in the public space, that is paragraph 55, counsel says, I assume that the minister has in mind the so-called Gupta leaked emails. The committee can certainly have regard to them. It is for the committee to decide how much weight to attach to them. It should do so on a sensible basis, but he says it's impossible to generalize about all the emails. With regard to the question about evidence that implicates the witness, and the minister raised the issue of there being a fundamental right of witnesses not to implicate themselves. In paragraph 57, counsel's response is that the evidence may well show that the department, its officials, or other people have been guilty of misconduct. The very purpose of the inquiry is to determine whether that was so. The only restriction is that everybody against whom the committee proposed to make an adverse finding must be given an opportunity to defend themselves. Under the Powers and Privileges Act, a witness is not entitled to refuse to answer a question merely because the answer might incriminate him or her. Such an incriminating answer may, however, not be used against a witness in subsequent proceedings. So basically, that's the issue of the protection of witnesses and the right of the committee to compel them to respond. Question 18, in paragraph 59, the minister raised issues of conflict of interest with regard to certain members of this committee, specifically the former finance minister, Mr. Praveen Gordhan, and in paragraph 60, council's response is that the committee does not perform a judicial or adjudicative function. Its function is merely to inquire into matters and report on them to the National Assembly. Its members are consequently not subject to any requirement of independence or impartiality. And he goes on to say, it's obvious that a person, a member, cannot be part of a committee that is judging its own conduct. However, the mere fact that a member of a committee has expressed strong views about a or has particular knowledge on a matter under investigation does not disqualify him or her. And counsel is of the view that he is not aware of any reason for Mr. Praveen Gordhan to withdraw from the inquiry. So, Chairperson, I'm trying to just quickly summarize the salient issues, but it's also the responses that council gave also are reflected in the letter that the committee drafted to the minister. So, in terms of what we have advised and the response, it's on par with the advice that council has provided.
Thank you very much. I can see the hands already. Honorable Mazzoni. Honorable Paula, Honorable Uyenge, Honorable Swart, Honorable Kongubele, Honorable Fed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I find this letter from the Office of the State Attorney infuriating. I think that their interpretation and understanding of the Constitution is both appalling and deeply concerning. Or should I say their lack of understanding? Chair, perhaps if the Office of the State Attorney spent as much time inquiring into state capture as it does in trying to intimidate MPs, it would be most helpful to South Africa. I think it's important for us to put on record that the executive of the government of the Republic of South Africa is accountable to Parliament, and not the other way around. The South African State Attorney is also advised to make themselves a fay with the Powers and Privileges Act, because if they did, they would know exactly what powers and privileges we as MPs enjoy. Chairperson, I would go so far as to say that when we look at this letter, it is a waste of public resource. The letter itself is not only poorly drafted, the grammar is appalling, and the legalese is even worse. And Chair, all I can say is, I understand that the response has gone back, but I do wish that we as a committee would also send to the State Law Advisor the motion of confidence that was passed to Advocate Venara this morning.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think now where we are in relation to the letter that is in front of us, I think the responses that are given to the minister are quite relevant. That everything is actually put into perspective. The clarity that we gave when we considered this letter, because this letter came before us, and we actually were of the view that we are doing our work, and our work we are doing under the auspices of the Constitution. The legal team was there, and at no stage where there was actually any doubt that what we are doing will be conflicted by anything, even the role of Advocate Vanara and the participation of Honorable Praveen Gordhan. So I'm sure this is a matter now that must be put to rest, because really, it has spoken our mind out. It's very clear now, it is cleared, and there is no one who must go around and giving, you know, wrong information that this what we are doing might be found wanting in terms of the law. And no, it's not like that. Any insinuation that seeks to say this what we are doing might be found otherwise on the other side of the law, no, that's a grave mistake, which I think legally, the legal gurus will actually say what you are doing really is in accordance with what the response is saying to the minister. Ngos.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, mine is not long. I think what we have been provided here is comprehensive in terms of response. The responsibility of Parliament is unfortunately to hold executive and anyone concerned with state monies accountable. And I think Parliament functions through oversight committees such as portfolio committees these. And the fact that this has been approved by Parliament, we are doing exactly that which we are expected to do. And in fact, it raised eyebrows for the minister not to understand that we are doing this within our own right. But also, it's a demonstration that you have a committee that is not captured to corruption. It's a committee that is not captured, it's able to do its work without any undue influence from executive and anyone. And I think we must appreciate their reaction. Because the reaction, it means we are making an impact to save South Africa. And I think the minister, what she's doing is basically the same noise we're receiving from some who are on stampede to come here and give evidence when we are busy having our own queue of witnesses to come. She must wait. She's going to be called at the right time to lead evidence. So we can't be intimidated on the basis of the accumulation of whatever from the links with Guptas, and now we are intimidated by her access to legal services such as these. We have noted the letter, but unfortunately it is not going to deter us from doing our work. We are going to ensure that we are holding everyone that has pocketed from the state-owned enterprises, in particular Eskom. So the minister must just chillax. We are doing our work. Our terms of reference are protecting us. Everything that we are doing here, including the people we called, they are protected. I think the response is very clear. No one is incriminated, and we have not even arrived to any decision or resolution. We are just listening. You see, if we are abusing our ears by listening from these witnesses, so, but that's a job we have to do. So I think, Chair, we are on right course to protect the past. And it's good that we have even given received an indication that there is some money, little as it might be, that will be paid back. It means we are making the impact. We just want the money of the state back to its coffers. Thank you very much.
Now, Chair, I think the legal opinion by Advocate Trengrove, who is a senior advocate, endorses the approach we have adopted from the word go and our in-house legal advice. And so I accept that there is no legal foundation for the letter from the Office of the State Attorney in Pretoria. It is now clearly set out in that legal opinion and the approach that we have adopted, and we need to reiterate, as we did this morning with our motion of confidence in our evidence leader, that this committee will not be intimidated at all, that we will exercise our constitutional duty of oversight, but we will do that fairly and in terms of the Constitution. And those implicated, as I've said continually, will be given the opportunity to respond. We will decide what weight to give to the evidence that has been led. And I think, Chair, that we are on a very sound basis to exercise our constitutional duty of inquiring into state capture and holding the executive to account. So I want to appreciate our legal advisers who have obtained this legal opinion, but it confirms the approach which we have adopted up to now. So thank you, Chair, for that.
I think one significantly has been covered by the colleagues, but I just want to say up front, Chair, it's good that we have time to formally respond to questions like these lousy as they are, and respond to them seriously. I think that's very, very important, so that we send a message that we listen to anyone, even if you're asking us common sense questions. Some of us have responded to this question a long time ago. I think people want a legal certificate for people to address that. What is also very embarrassing is for the state attorney not to understand this. Because the person who's supposed to advise the minister or the executive on how to respond to these things in the manner required is the state attorney. Now, you can understand that even the state attorney, they have been sleeping, not doing their work. Now, they are learning in a very harsh way. Now, I think the state attorney will take Councillor Tremgrove's advice and he become a better state attorney. Let's hope he will read from this. All I'm saying, I want to praise the leadership chair, for ensuring that we respond formally. You see, the other thing that we must understand, I guess the executive is not used to this vigor of committees doing their work and in an unwavering manner, and also united, by the way, because, you know, dealing with issues of corruption, so that most of the time it's not an ideological issue. It requires unity of all parliamentarians, because that partisanship, if it's not protected by solid, clean government, it will never, survive itself. Then to ensure that the platform on which that partisanship survives is a clean platform, parties must be united in dealing with corruption. And I think the executive is not used to that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, members. I think you would like to say the final word.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I've noted the members' comments and that it endorses our previous response to the minister. I think it would be appropriate for this chairperson on behalf of this committee to respond to the letter of the state attorney to indicate that this is our views and we endorse the process and we are confident in the soundness of this matter.
I hear you say the chairperson, but the letter is addressed direct to our legal department in the name of advocates. Advocate, you may come in.
No, thanks, Chair. Now, when I received the letter, I had immediately responded to it. I indicated that the allegations were without any merit, and they were denied. And that's the allegations, I view them. Actually, the allegations by itself were rejected with the contempt they deserve. And that the invited them to lay the complaint with the General Counsel of the Bar. So that was in respect of the fact that the allegations were addressed to me. But I did make a commitment to the state attorneys that because I am an official of parliament and I'm not a frolic, I'm not on a frolic of my own, that the letter would be forwarded to the institution for the institution to respond to them. So I think in keeping with that promise, it is appropriate that we should address as a committee on behalf of the institution a response to this letter. Thank you.
That's the proposal, members. That's the proposal. Are you? Honorable Bonsoir?
No, Chair, I'm in total agreement. Whilst I appreciate that this letter by the State Attorney was sent to Mr. Venaro and is on the instructions of the Department of Public Enterprises, basically it is a member of this committee or a member that is assisting this committee that has been criticised unfairly in this letter without any legal basis. And I think, as we did this morning, we have all indicated our full support for Advocate Venaro, our thanks for the evidence that he's led, the good job he's done, and that it should be that we as Parliament should also take a view and respond to this letter and say, we as a committee appointed him to do this job, and we obviously considered the legal implications, and there's no legal basis. In fact, it's an affront to Advocate Venaro, and it can be seen to a certain degree as a contempt of this institution as well. We considered those issues when we appointed him, and who is the State Attorney to try to tell Parliament how we should conduct our business? That is what the legal opinion says, and we are entitled to determine how we conduct our meetings. And I do see it as an affront to us as Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Mazzoni.
Chairperson, I live in Pretoria. I'm quite happy to hand deliver it to the State Attorney on behalf of the committee.
Paula, are you not covered? Oh, you still want to say something?
Yeah, no, basically I was going to say, because when I was reading the letter, it cast aspersion on the basis of his own profession as an advocate. So it's good that he has responded. I was going to support that as a committee, we must also make our own response on the basis of the committee.
I'm okay. I support the approach, but it must not be Muslim who's taking it. Officials must do it.
The committee has agreed that the committee does a response to this effect. Thank you very much. Thank you, our legal advisor. You know the task now. Thank you. Honorable members, I'm informed that our program is continuing from Tuesday. It's just a reminder that the whole day, yes, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And hopefully the chairperson will be back by then. And from my side, let me take this opportunity to thank you for your cooperation with me as an interim chair standing in for the chairperson of the Oversight Inquiry, Honorable Rantu. And I appreciated it very much. Thank you. And thank you to the members of our guests and the media as well for their cooperation. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.